This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a nonprofit healthcare sharing ministry that allows you to control and manage your own healthcare and choose any doctor or hospital in the nation. If you're a freedom-loving American looking for contract-free healthcare, call now 855-585-4237 or go to libertyhealthshare.org.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
It's great to be with you again. Well, one of the risks of interacting with unbelievers about Christianity or the biblical worldview is hitting a big pothole during the discussion. And you probably know what I'm talking about. You're going back and forth about creation or maybe abortion or the exclusive claims of Jesus Christ. And all of a sudden, the unbeliever derails you with some question or point that you just don't know how to answer in the moment. Or maybe that unbeliever is just downright hostile and it just ends badly. And unfortunately, Christians who experience that kind of blowback can be tempted to just end the discussion, lick their wounds, and lose courage to have conversations like that ever again. Of course, we can't think like that, though. The real question is, how can I have a conversation with somebody about biblical truth with confidence and with good arguments and also with kindness? Well, my next guest is here to help. Greg Kokel is founder and president of Stand to Reason and adjunct professor of Christian apologetics at Biola University. And his great book, Tactics, is now available on DVD with a study guide. I'm so excited. And he offers guidance on how to get into the driver's seat when it comes to sharing your Christian convictions. I'm thrilled to have him back. And Greg, welcome back. Wonderful to have you here again.
Janet, it is always a treat to talk with my favorite host.
And my favorite guest. You're just so great. I love it. It's so fun to talk to you, Greg, because you just know what you're doing. And I think for a lot of Christians, that tends to be the way we think. He knows what he's doing, but I don't know what I'm doing. Do you think that we suffer from a lack of confidence? Is that part of the problem here in speaking to unbelievers?
I definitely think it is, but I don't think it's because of lack of knowledge principally. I mean, that certainly is a factor. When we talk at Stand to Reason about being a good ambassador for Christ, we talk about three qualities, and one of them is knowledge, an accurately informed mind. But I think the reason that most people feel most uncomfortable is the second part of being a good ambassador, and we call that wisdom or an artful method, and that's the issue we're talking about today. That is the ability to maneuver in conversations in a winsome and attractive way so that we are, as you pointed out, in the driver's seat of the conversation, even if we don't know all the things we'd like to know. And this is why I think the tactical approach is so helpful, because when you learn some of the basics of it, you don't have to have a PhD in apologetics or theology or anything like that. This allows you to kind of initiate some maneuvers that makes the whole conversation go much more smoothly, a lot more effectively, even though you don't have all the information. Want to get the information? Yeah, that's a lifelong endeavor. Build that as time goes on, getting an answer for the hope that's within you. But some of these moves that will teach you how to maneuver in conversations are very easy to learn, and that's what we're talking about today.
Perfect. Okay, Greg, now one of the things I know a lot of listeners will be thinking right now is, listen, tactics are one thing. I don't even know how to get the conversation going. I go on an airplane. I sit next to the guy. He clearly needs the Lord. I have no idea what to say. What if he puts on his headphones and spits at me? Who knows? But what about starting the conversation in the first place, looking for opportunities? What sorts of things have you learned over the years about getting into a conversation with an unbeliever?
Right. Well, I encourage people to take a tip from Lieutenant Columbo. Remember that famous detective from TV fame now, like 4 decades ago. But, you know, he shows up at the crime scene, and it's his job to solve the crime in a certain sense, parallel to what you just described. How do we engage somebody in a thoughtful way about the claims of Jesus Christ? And what's his first move? Well, he realizes he cannot move towards his goal at all unless he gathers information. And so I try to encourage people that the first thing they think about when they find themselves in a circumstance where they'd like to make a difference for the Lord is not the end game. You don't think about going to the end, winning that person to Christ, even though this is what we all want for them. You think about the very initial step, just gather some information, gather some intel, if you will. Find out more about the person. You mentioned an airplane. I'm on a lot of airplanes. So I find out, I introduce myself, or I just say hi. You know, it's just casual. Hi, where are you headed? You know,
yeah.
I'm Greg, you know, that kind of stuff. And I often will not even get my name unless we start getting into a little bit more thorough conversation. Then I make it more personal. I ask their name, and then they give me theirs, and I give them mine. And then I just start drawing them out. Generally, we are not starting out on a spiritual topic, all right?
Right?
They might ask me what I do for a living, where I'm going, why I'm going there, and then I can kind of move into that since I'm probably going somewhere to give a presentation of some sort. Everybody doesn't have that same outlet. All I'm suggesting that one do at this point, don't think about getting spiritual yet. Just think about gathering information, being friendly, and the way to do that is by asking questions. Drawing a person out, getting to know a little bit more about them. And the more that you ask questions, the less pressure there's going to be on you because you're not doing all the talking. They're talking. And people like that. Showing interest in somebody with questions is just simply good manners. So that's the first step. And then, you know, you start keeping your ears and your eyes open to see where things go. I don't actually think that every single engagement is a divine appointment. That's not my theology. I mean, sometimes we just shift passing in the night and the Lord doesn't have anything for it. But I think that we can test the waters with an attitude that, Lord, I'm your servant. And we begin to test the waters by drawing out people, gathering information with just genial, friendly questions, and then begin to watch and see where that goes. That's the first step in my view.
Now, Greg, this is interesting because when you say you don't necessarily have to have an end goal in mind, just start by being pleasant and being conversational and so forth. But even Columbo would say, I have an end game here. So what should you have in your mind as your end goal if you're just having a conversation, or does that kind of stifle the conversation if you're worried about a goal?
Right. Well, this is where the parallel with Columbo breaks down just a little bit, because we know Columbo's job is to solve the crime. But when it's a Christian talking with a non-Christian, it isn't that Christian's job to win that non-Christian to Christ on that day. We don't know how this is going to play out. And these things take lots of times, okay?
Right.
It turns out most of the time, and this is an important concept for people to keep in mind, I'm going to shift metaphors here a little bit. Most of the time, we are thinking about the harvest, that is the end game, winning that person to Christ, but most of the time, the work that needs to be done is not harvesting, but gardening.
Yes,
okay,
right.
Let me say that again. We're thinking about the harvest, and that's good that we want to harvest in that person's life, but our task at the moment is likely to be gardening. That is, we're just going to move that person a little closer to the goal. We are probably not going to harvest that person. And if we're thinking about the end game being harvesting in that moment, chances are we're going to try to move too fast. We're going to try to get to the close too quickly, you know, the prayer to receive Christ. We're going to push that person a little too quickly, and we might bungle the whole enterprise and make everybody feel uncomfortable. Now, I don't mind making people feel uncomfortable in the right way, but if we're moving too fast because the only model we have in our mind is a harvesting model, then it's not likely to end well as an experience. However, if we think of ourselves first as gardeners and just start to do a little gardening, the way I put it is I like to try to put a stone in someone's shoe, you know. I want to get them thinking. And then we think of ourselves as part of a bigger team that God is orchestrating, and there are some gardeners and there are some harvesters, and we start out gardening, and then we can do some good even if we don't harvest, if we can put some things in there to get people to think and have a conversation of a spiritual nature. I think that actually frees people up from the pressure of trying to close the deal before it's time.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Echoes of 1 Corinthians chapter 3, where Apollos watered, God made it grow, so neither
right.
the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. Everybody knows this verse.
That's right.
That's exactly what you're talking about. And one of the things I want to get into when we come back from this break, Greg, is the fact that if we are to really make disciples, it seems to me that we do have to have in view that the potential convert and hopefully eventual Christian who needs to be discipled and then will grow in the faith needs to understand Christianity. It's not just a matter of me closing the deal necessarily so I can put my, you know, my check mark on my belt that day. Got another one. But this is an interesting aspect of things. I want to pick this up when we come back. Greg Kokel with us. Tactics is his book, and we'll return on Janet Mefford Today. Socialism is being purposely dressed up in Christian choir robes by once trusted and very influential church leaders. Their gatherings are growing in numbers as they shelve the true gospel and replace it with a false one known as the social gospel. What is this agenda to undermine the influence of Christ across the world? And whatever happened to powerful biblical Christianity? Noted producers Judd Saul, Trevor Loudon, Curtis Bowers, and Pastor Kerry Gordon of Cornerstone Church have joined forces to create enemies within the church, a hard-hitting international documentary that will reveal the plans and the players behind this movement and shine a bright light of restoration and hope upon Christ's church. To stay updated about this film and learn how you can support this important effort, go to enemieswithinthechurch.com and subscribe to the Enemies Within the Church newsletter. While you're there, be sure to enjoy a sneak peek of the movie. Go now to enemieswithinthechurch.com, sponsored by Cornerstone World Outreach International. That's enemieswithinthechurch.com. Christmas is coming, and what better gift to give someone you love than a great Christian book? But where can you find one? Look no further than the Northampton Press. They reprint some of the greatest Christian literature ever published from the English and American Puritans, men like John Bunyan, Jonathan Edwards, and Octavius Winslow. These were Christians whose knowledge of the Bible was deep and whose commentary on God's Word is so convicting that it's virtually unmatched. I can honestly say the Northampton Press prints some of the best Christian books that I've ever read. And right now, if you purchase any Northampton Press book and mention Janet Mefford Today, they'll send you a free copy of the book Law and Liberty, A Biblical Look at Legalism. Check out their catalog online at northamptonpress.org. That's Northampton with one H. Give the gift of a truly great biblical book this Christmas. Visit northamptonpress.org. That's N-O-R-T, hamptonpress.org. Visit them now at northamptonpress.org. Janet Mefford Today. It is wonderful to have you here. And as always, it is incredibly wonderful to have Greg Kokel here, founder and president of Stand to Reason. His book is Tactics, now out on DVD with a study guide, a wonderful resource for you and maybe your small group or Bible study or church to be able to learn how to have these conversations with non-Christians and really delve into some of the important things that come up when you talk to an unbeliever, things about Christ and salvation and all of these other social topics that will come up like abortion. Greg, when we were talking about this before we went to the break, we were talking about how, you know, it's not incumbent upon me always to close the deal. Now, somebody might say, though, what if someone is ready to close the deal and then I freak out? Like, we're on an airplane. Should I ask the guy to pray with me if he says, boy, I really want to receive Christ? What if that one in a million thing does occur on the airplane? How do you handle that?
Well, what I've done in the past is I've just asked a person whether they wanted to pray right now and put their trust in Jesus. Tell Jesus that they're trusting him to rescue them from themselves and from their crimes against God. Hmm. I mean, it's a pretty simple, straightforward thing. Now, keep in mind, what you've just described is a circumstance of somebody who's ready to go. I mean, the fruit is ripe, and generally, when the fruit is ripe, it pretty much drops into the basket.
True.
It's not a hard sell at that point. I remember, you know, 43 years ago when I became a Christian, my brother had been the gardener most of the time, and then when I was ripe, I just told him.
Yeah.
He was telling me about Christ when he came to visit me once on a Friday night again, and I said, Mark, you don't have to tell me any more about this. I've already decided I want to become a Christian. Now then I prayed that night, and that's what he said. Well, let's pray, you know. The point there is that when somebody's ready, they're ready, and you're not going to get a big fight out of them. They're going to be willing to do whatever is necessary. And so one can just invite someone to bow their heads, and you might even offer them a prayer that they can hitchhike on. If you like, I'll pray, and you can just repeat after me, if what I say reflects your own conviction here. Is that all right with you?
Perfect.
So you ask that permission. Now, if you're on an airplane, you know, you want to do it more quietly and just protect the person's privacy in a certain sense. I mean, it's a private conversation, so you're not making a big fuss about it. You're just quietly praying your prayer. And I think that's a very simple step to take at that particular point. I think the reason that people get a little bit nervous about that is because they have an ethic. They have kind of inherited an ethic that is a push, 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 push ethic.
Right.
Let's push them for decision, maybe before the time.
Yeah.
And frankly, I don't want any false conversions. You know,
right.
I can. You know, it's one thing to get a person to pray a prayer. It's another thing to get a conversion.
Right.
I don't want prayers. I want conversions. I want people to have a change of life as a result of an encounter with Christ. And so I am not inclined to hurry the process. I want people to have a proper understanding. Just before break, Janet, you mentioned that people need to understand Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
I think that not only do non-Christians not understand Christianity, I think a lot of Christians don't really understand Christianity either.
Yes.
Which is right. The reason I wrote the other book we talked about last time we chatted a few months back, The Story of Reality, How the World Began, How It Ends, and everything important that happens in between. It's to provide that foundation for the Christian then to speak clearly about the foundational things of Christianity. So I think if you have an opportunity and the person is ready to go, no reason not to encourage them to bow their heads and pray with you to ask Christ to come into their life, and maybe you can give them a little help at the same time. But I just, my emphasis is not so much on the harvesting, because I think that kind of takes care of itself more often than not, but it's more on the gardening, which is to bring the person to a point of harvest. Incidentally, it might interest people to know that the whole idea of praying to receive Christ and coming forward and altar calls is actually kind of historically new.
Yeah.
You don't see that kind of thing in the book of Acts. All of that kind of came in the early 19th century.
Finny.
So
mm-hmm.
Before the gospel was preached, and then people just responded with faith in Christ.
Interesting. Yeah, that's so true. So now you have an example, Greg, of staying in the driver's seat. You have a lot of great material in the book, but you talk, for example, about this conversation with a young woman at a photo center who had the pentagram around her neck.
Oh, yeah. That's
I thought
right.
That was
the
really
in Wisconsin, I call her, right?
Yeah. Now, I thought it might be nice for you if you can recall the details of that conversation, or at least the sketch of that conversation, how you
sure.
engaged
well,
her. Yeah, go ahead.
I was in northern Wisconsin. We have some property there that my grandpa had when I was a kid, and so I like to go up there and go fishing in the spring. In fact, I'll be going there in a couple of days with my family for summer vacation. And I caught a fish that I wanted to have the photo digitized. This is before my digital days, so I could show it on the screen there at the church that I was going to be speaking at on the following Sunday and kind of flex my fishing muscles, you know. And the gal who was processing the order had a large pentagram around her neck. And so I asked her, I said, does that jewelry have any religious significance? Because it looked like a statement. You know, a pentagram is a five-pointed star, which is often an occultic symbol.
Yes.
And she said, yes, it does. The 5 points stand for earth, wind, fire, water, and spirit. Okay, so now the bells are going off a little bit in my mind. But I asked her, I said, just for clarification, I'm interested if that has spiritual significance for you personally, because a lot of people wear a cross and, you know, it doesn't really mean anything to them. It's just jewelry. And she said, yes, I'm a pagan. At which, God bless her, after I talked to this woman, my wife started chuckling when she heard the witch, as it turned out, in Wisconsin, identify herself as a pagan. Then she said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be rude, but I never heard anybody admit it before, you know?
Yeah.
And so we got into this conversation. It turned out she was a witch, and we got into this great conversation about the issue, it turned out, about abortion, because she said, well, as a witch, she respects all life. And I said, well, that would make you pro-life, wouldn't it? She said, no, I'm actually pro-choice. Really? Isn't it unusual for a witch who respects all life to actually be pro-abortion? And she said, yeah, it is. And then she said, I know I could never kill a baby, referring to abortion. And then I said, well, if you think abortion is baby killing, maybe we should stop other people from killing babies. And she said, no, I think people should have a choice. And notice this conversation is going along. It's very friendly and very relaxed. But I don't know if your listeners caught it. The entire time, I'm simply asking questions to move this conversation forward.
Right.
And every single time I ask a question, I used a question to initiate the conversation. I asked her about her jewelry. And then when I got more information, that prompted another thought, so I asked another question about it. And as it's moving forward, I'm getting more and more and more information about her view. And we are moving the conversation forward, but there's no pressure at all. I wasn't under pressure. I was just asking questions, and I was listening. She wasn't under pressure because I wasn't being mean to her, and I was just drawing her out, asking her opinion about these things. And she didn't feel like she's being cornered or anything. However, I did have some questions that came up a little later in the conversation. And by the way, this whole dialogue is in the book Tactics, and I think it's all in the workbook as
yes.
well.
Yep.
The study guide that goes with the DVD, because it's such a great illustration of how you can kind of start from ground zero, no motion at all, but by being alert, you can begin asking questions that are entirely genial and friendly and enter into a very productive, useful conversation that, as I said earlier, allows you to do a little gardening, moving that individual forward. And as to the gardening point, you mentioned 1 Corinthians, Janet. John chapter 4, after the woman at the well incident, while Jesus is in Sychar still with the disciples, there's an interesting little conversation that your listeners should go and check out, because Jesus talks about the harvest and the sowing, which is what I'm referring to as gardening.
Yes.
He says to the disciples, you are about to harvest where you did not sow, so that the one who sows and the one who reaps can rejoice together. Mm-hmm. In other words, there's one field, And there's one team, but on that team there are gardeners, as I call them, and there are harvesters. There are sowers and there are reapers. And I actually think most of us are sowers, and that's me. I spend most of my time sowing, and I'm happy to do it. And I don't think anybody's going to get mad if some other harvester comes into their garden and starts harvesting the crop they've been working on.
Right.
No, we rejoice together.
Right.
And the tactics material will help them to garden more effectively.
That's so great. Yeah, and another thing that you did during that conversation with the witch was to show her inconsistency when you talked about the fact that she said, I wouldn't kill my baby. Ooh, you just said it was a baby. So how did it end?
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just saying.
Oh, how did it end?
Yeah,
okay,
how did it
what
end?
What happened was, I made a couple of points and got to this point here that you're just referring to, and that is how you can use questions to show an inconsistency. Because she said, I think people should have a choice, and that things like incest should be taken into consideration that make it okay to kill a baby. And by the way, we're using the kill a baby language the whole time because she's the one who introduced that phrase. So I'm just trading on this language that she was using. And I said, well, if I had a 2-year-old or a 1-year-old next to me here who's a baby who had been conceived by incest, then on your view, I should be allowed to kill this baby. Is that right? And that stumped her, you know, because I was applying her view accurately and consistently, but she hadn't thought about that.
Wow.
And she finally said, well, I'd have mixed feelings about that, which seems bizarre, ooh, but killing the baby, right? But she was saying it as a concession. Now, what happened is at that point, I realized that the line was growing behind me, and I was interfering with her work product. And I realized that my opportunity as a gardener or as an ambassador for Christ now came to an end. I couldn't say, hey, I haven't got to the whole gospel yet. Sit down, be quiet, maybe you'll learn something. No, I just took the opportunity that I had, used it to the best capability I could, and then when it clearly came to an end, I let it go.
Yeah.
And I entrusted this woman to the Lord. And I think that is the model that this we're part of a team of gardeners, and God has assigned harvesters to that team as well. And if we have a chance to garden, we do what we can, and then we move on. And we don't push the river, and we don't bruise the fruit. That's my view, at least.
That's great, Greg. We're going to come back. Greg Kogel, Tactics is the book. We'll be back on Janet Mefford Today. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a nonprofit healthcare sharing ministry that allows you to control and manage your own healthcare and choose any doctor or hospital in the nation. If you're a freedom-loving American looking for contract-free healthcare, call now 855-585-4237 or go to libertyhealthshare.org. Back on Janet Mefford Today, my guest, Greg Kokol, who is the founder and president of Stand to Reason and the author of Tactics. It's now out on a DVD with a study guide, great study guide, a guide to effectively discussing your Christian convictions and taking opportunities where you see them with people who don't yet know Christ to garden a little bit. I love how Greg has said that. We don't all have to be harvesters, but we definitely are all gardeners. So let's talk about the suicide tactic, Greg. This is kind of interesting. We've talked about the Columbo tactic and we've talked about taking these opportunities, but what is the suicide tactic?
Well, the suicide tactic is it's the ability basically to see when somebody else's point of view self-destructs, okay?
Yeah.
That is, it has within its own view the seeds of its own destruction, and there are different ways this can work out, but the point is we do not have to find a way to show them that their view is mistaken. It's already built in. And so if we know what to look for, we can simply point that out, okay?
Yeah.
So what if I said to you, Janet, I said, Janet, I cannot speak a single word of English. Well, of course, you can see my act of making the statement in English demonstrates that my statement itself is false.
Yes.
Or what if I said there are no English sentences that exceed three words in length. You're thinking, wait a minute, that's an English sentence, right?
Sure.
Yeah, and it's longer than three words. Yeah. Well, then your statement is false out of the gate, okay?
Right.
So there's the concept, pretty straightforward. Now, how does that play itself out in talking about spiritual things, okay? Well, here's one that strikes me as so obvious that I can't understand why it is so popular on campus, which is the place where you're supposed to learn knowledge. And the popular notion is that there is no truth,
mm-hmm.
okay? That there are no things you can count on to be accurate. Now, that is a self-refuting statement. In other words, it has within it the seeds of its own destruction, as some of your listeners are already putting it all together. You say, oh, yeah, well, wait a minute. That seems to be a statement that the person who's stating it thinks is true.
Mm-hmm.
But the statement is that there is none of that truth stuff.
Yes.
So you can see how it's at odds with each other.
Of course.
And how would I deal with that then if somebody says, well, there is no truth? As a Christian ambassador, well, the simplest way is following our Columbo tactic is to use a question to point that out. And so a question in this case would be something like, is that statement true? Really, is that true? Oh, there is no truth. No truth. Really, is that true? Do you see now the ball's in their court, and now they have to explain how it's true that there is no truth. And what this is meant to do is not just to stop them in their tracks and show them that you're smarter or more clever than they are. It's meant to force them to think beyond their cultural slogans,
good.
Which there is no truth, is an example of. Mm-hmm. It's simply a cultural slogan they've been socialized to say to put off the Christian, but they've never thought about it themselves. Here's another example. A lot of people are taken by the idea that science is the only way to know anything that's really true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, philosophy and religion, that's just mere opinion. You want truth? Okay, you get that from science. Science is the sole arbiter of truth, okay? Now think about this. This is called scientism, and a whole lot of people believe this, all right? But the statement that science is the sole arbiter of truth or the sole way of knowing the truth, well, that's not a statement that science teaches you.
Exactly.
That's a statement you bring to the project.
Yeah.
But people think that's true. And I remember one of my mentors, J.P. Moreland, when he encountered this once, he asked the guy, he said, you know, I understand what you're saying here, but I'm really surprised you have not given any scientific evidence to support your notion that science is the only way we can know truth. So I'm confused. Help me out here, you know. So what So this notion is self-refuting because the statement can't satisfy its own demand. It can't live by its own rules, so to speak. Here's another popular example of this. Somebody says, it's wrong to push your morality on me. You say, why? Well, because there is no morality. Morality is just a matter of individual opinion. Okay, let me see if I understand you correctly. You say, there is no objective morality. It's just a matter of individual opinion. Therefore, it is wrong for me to push my morality on you. Did I get that right? Do you see that? You can see the inherent contradiction.
Yes.
I remember the first time that I was exposed to that particular thing, you know, forcing your morality. Well, it sounds like you're forcing your morality on me right now. And all of a sudden the change fell into the meter for me, and I never realized that was self-refuting. It gives way to the suicide tactic. And so once you get in the habit of seeing these self-refuting things, and I have a whole bunch of examples in the book and in the workbook with the DVD, which, by the way, is a fabulous thing to use with Bible study groups because a whole group can do it together.
Yes.
And you really, you build on each other's energy in this kind of thing. But once you see how the suicide tactic really works and you're able to identify these self-refuting statements, then you can use your Columbo game plan now to ask questions to expose the problem. And it becomes very, very powerful in dealing with these kinds of things.
It's great. I love all of those examples because sometimes when that occurs, and I've been in situations where I've pointed some of those things out, the person just stammers. You know, I don't know what to say.
Right. I have a name for that. I call it the Simon and Garfunkel response. Remember those two
yes.
guys that wrote that song back in the 60s called The Sounds of Silence?
That's it. That's it.
Sometimes you get the sounds of silence in response because people don't know how to respond.
Yeah, and now this is tricky, Greg, because sometimes when you're in that moment, you want to start spiking the football because it's just human to go, gotcha.
Right.
You don't want to do that, though, right? Because clearly you're a Christian. You're trying to be polite and you're trying to be kind and you're trying to be gracious. You're not going to score points in the gardening if you start saying,
That's right. I won.
I got you, buddy.
Yeah, well, you know, spiking the football is when you get a touchdown. This isn't a touchdown. We're just moving the ball down the field. The touchdown is bringing that person to Christ, and then you can spike the football. But we're not trying to get one over on people. We are trying to help them to see that the way they're thinking about these things is just not good, and that there's a more sound way of approaching this. And when they think more carefully about the things that really matter, then Christianity is going to start looking more attractive.
Okay.
On the thinking side, we can make it more attractive on the subjective side, so to speak, by living our life in a holy way, in a gracious way, and all of that's really critical. But a lot of people think that, well, Christianity is just for nice people, you know? It's not for thinking people. And what we at Stand to Reason have been trying to show is the two go together.
Right.
We want to have a warm spirituality, but we also want to have sharp minds. And we want to show people that the smart money is on Jesus of Nazareth. So the tactical approach is meant to work with people in their ideas and to maneuver, even if you don't know a lot of stuff. When I start training this, I'm going to be in Louisville in two weekends I'll be in Louisville. And when I'm going to be teaching on this, and I'm going to start out telling them, you're going to mark this day, many of you, as a day that everything changed for you in the way that you engage people about the claims of Christ. And the reason I could say that is so many people have told me that this material changed their lives.
Wow.
That's the phrase they use, Janet.
Good.
And I believe it because it's changed my life in the way I engage people about Jesus.
You know, one of the neat things I think about what you're saying, Greg, is when you do get into a moment like that in a conversation with a non-Christian, oftentimes the reaction you will get is, somebody said something that made me think. I mean, we're in such an amusement culture where people don't think. They just accept everybody else's slogans, as you said before, and cultural cliches, and everybody thinks that way. And you mean somebody doesn't think that way? But when you have that moment where the person gets it and says, I hadn't thought about that, sometimes that can move them in a direction, go, I want to talk to you more.
Absolutely. I wish I had a dime for every time I've heard somebody say, I never knew there could be any good reason to believe in Christianity. In fact, I heard it from Alan Schliemann, one of Stand to Reason speakers, just the other day when we were on the air talking about how he came around, that he was a faltering Christian and nobody had any answers for him. And finally, he found Stand to Reason and J.P. Moreland also and some other people like us and started to realize, oh my gosh, there's all this fabulous stuff.
I love it. Greg Koch, we're going to go to a break. We'll be back with Greg and his great book, Tactics. Stay with us. How can Christians stand on God's word at a time when radical activists want to compromise the church on the issue of biblical sexuality? A rising tide of LGBT activism is becoming apparent inside our churches. Wearing a religious facade, these activists talk about LGBT Christians and sexual minorities, and their goal is to move our churches away from the word of God. It's time for the church to defend biblical truth without compromise. That's why I'd like to invite you to join me, Janet Mefford, at the God's Voice Conference, a biblical response to the queering of the church. Sponsored by First Stone Ministries, God's Voice will bring clarity to the confusion surrounding revoiced sexuality and identity. Our team of experts will demonstrate how the language of the LGBT Christian movement is rooted not in the Bible, but in the same ideology that has wreaked havoc on our culture. The God's Voice Conference will take place February 22nd and 23rd in Oklahoma City, and we want to see you there. It's time for the church to bow the knee to God's voice. To register or for more information, visit godsvoice.us. That's godsvoice.us. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. It's great to have you here and great to be talking with Greg Kochel, founder and president of Stand to Reason. And we are discussing his book, Tactics. It is just such a great resource for anybody who wants to know how to have a conversation with an unbeliever and be in the driver's seat and kind of move along the conversation. STR.org is the website, by the way. So, Greg, let's talk about some of these people who are difficult. I've run into quite a few people like this over the years, as I'm sure you have.
They're out there, aren't they?
Yeah, they're out there. And they can be downright hostile. And sometimes, as you mentioned in your material, sometimes you're just outmatched. Sometimes they get a point in. And at that point, it can be really daunting for a Christian to say, uh-oh, now what do I do? How do I get out of this gracefully? Well, I'm letting the Lord down. Greg, what do you say to somebody who's caught in that kind of a moment where it isn't going so well?
Well, there are two different kinds of isn't going so well, it seems to me, and one of them is when we're outmatched information-wise. That is, I've encouraged your listeners, even if they don't have a lot of information, just to step out with some of these questions and follow the game plan, and it's going to serve them well, and they'll learn more as time goes on. And even without learning anything, the Holy Spirit can use this for great effect in the body and in their efforts for Christ. But sometimes, you know, you do get up against the wall. I do as well. And what I recommend is that a person who finds themselves outmatched information-wise, okay, I call this being in the hot seat. They just don't know how to deal with the information. The person is coming on real strong with a bunch of odds and ends, and they feel like, oh my gosh, I can't deal with this, okay? This is a time where I think the Christian ought to switch from what I call persuasion mode to student mode, okay? Back to the first step of gathering information. If I find that I'm overmatched with information by a person that I can't answer, what I'm going to do, I'm not going to tuck my tail and run. Instead, I'm going to say something like, do you mind slowing down just a little bit here? And let me just, I want to write some of this down because you obviously know more about this than I do. Please tell me, and I'm going to give them two questions now. I can say it any way I want, but it amounts to this. What it is that you believe, first question, what is your main point? Secondly, why do you believe it? What are your reasons for the view? And that's the first two steps of our game plan. What do you mean by that? How did you come to that conclusion? So when I shift back to student mode from persuasion mode, I'm now in learning mode, and I'm back in control of the conversation because I'm the one asking the questions.
Good.
I'm not falling over backwards. And what am I going to do? I'm going to start taking notes. I'm going to make a mental note of the things that the person is saying that I can't deal with. And then on my own, at my leisure, when the pressure is off, I can go ahead and address the things that I've written down. This gives me a great way of dealing with people who know more than I do. And maybe I'm totally outmatched by them, and yet I can still make good use of the conversation. I'm not going to lead that person to Christ. It's become clear right now that's not the case. But, you know, I think for a lot of Christians, just being willing to be a student in that circumstance, rather than banging heads with somebody, which I think is our impulse, well, we can't beat them with words, so we're going to be nasty and harsh to them.
Right.
Well, just being a friendly student and listening to the other person's view, it's going to give us an education, and it's also, I think, going to have an impression on the other person. Hey, these Christians aren't so bad. Look,
yes,
at, he's listening.
Yes, yes.
You know, and so that is a powerful way of dealing with it. I call it getting out of the hot seat.
Perfect. You know, I would also think it would be a bit disarming, because when you get somebody who's really hostile and argumentative and wants to throw 400,000 facts at you within the space of 2 minutes, if you back away and you start to say, oh, really? All right, well, let me write that down because that's interesting.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you're giving...
Yeah, let me ask you a couple more questions about that. Think of Lieutenant Columbo, again, for the ones who remember the TV show. He comes in kind of on, you know, low-key. He doesn't seem scary. You know, he's non-threatening. And so if we are the people in the same way with the big shot who thinks they know everything, and we just, okay, we can go with that. We just listen to what they have to say and begin asking questions. You will be amazed at how often when you're just asking questions for clarification's sake. What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? Now, I don't quite understand this. Can you help me understand that? We start asking for clarification. We find out these folks have not thought through their view as well as either we or they thought they did. And the questions themselves are going to stonewall those people a little bit. It's amazing how that happens, Janet.
Yeah, it really is. Now, you also talk about a different category of person, the steamroller,
right,
or the person who interrupts all the time. And and you mentioned something that I think is quite significant. Sometimes somebody will argue against Christianity because he is genuinely unconvinced or maybe ignorant of the facts, the historical evidence, etc.
Right.
But there are other people that have different reasons for that kind of reaction, the hostile, angry, you Christians,
right,
abuse. How do you deal with that aspect? For example, in the middle of a conversation, you find out that one of the things that's really driving the hostility is that that person was abused as a child by a church volunteer or something like that.
Right.
What do you
right.
do about the emotional issue that is keeping the person perhaps from listening to the logic and the rational thought that you're trying to communicate?
Well, if you uncover the emotional issue in the conversation, like what you just described, this is where you go, you know, get out of persuasion mode immediately and go into empathy mode. If that person is willing to talk about it, empathizing with them in the bad experience that they had, just being willing to listen, can have a really powerful impact. This happened to me on an airplane once, and a guy said he's not a Christian. He used to be a Christian. In fact, he used to be a preacher's kid, but his dad is no longer a preacher because his dad's no longer a Christian. And I suddenly realized I'm sitting next to a whole lot of baggage here.
Yeah.
And so I just let that person talk and let him unload his frustration and anger, and I empathized with him. And I didn't fight back. And he told me towards the end of that segment, he said, you know, most Christians would be really angry at me right now based on what I've said to you, but you're not angry, and I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And so just the fact that I was willing to listen to his own struggles and pains and the abuse he'd experienced had a salutary impact on him. But there's another type of person that's abusive, and I call them a steamroller because they're abusive in a whole different way. They're constantly interrupting, to put it simply. Boom, 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 boom. They're not interested in answers. They're interested in controlling the conversation. And you have to deal with steamrollers aggressively, or else you're not going to get anywhere. And I have a three-step thing that I outline in the workbook with the video guide dealing with the steamroller to stop them. And if you don't stop them, you got to let them go. And the first step is stopping by negotiating a little bit, very gently. Oh, hold on just a minute. I'm not finished yet. Can I finish my thought? And then I'll let you jump in. Steamrollers want to talk, so you can't talk too long yourself. Let them know that you'll let them in, but you hold up your hand a little bit, not belligerently, but let me just finish the thought. I'm almost finished. Do you want an answer? Okay, you get permission. A lot of times that's all it takes to stop them, okay?
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't. It's just they're just really rude. And then you have to stop the conversation and address the rudeness directly.
Good.
Okay? Mm-hmm. You asked a question. I want to answer it, but I have a hard time because you keep interrupting. So you have to tell me whether you want me to answer your question or not. If you don't want me to answer, if you just want to talk, I'll listen. But if you want me to answer and you keep interrupting, then I'm sorry, we can't have a conversation. So you tell me what it's going to be.
Right.
Now, that's a little more direct, but that's required to stop these people. And if they don't play ball at that point, I just say, leave them. You stop them, you shame them, and if that doesn't work, you leave them. And all the details are right there in the workbook, so you know step by step how this works out. And it's been incredibly effective to deal with those most obnoxious of people called steamrollers who are always interrupting.
Yes, and the advantage we sometimes have is if we get somebody like that on the line, we can just hang up on them. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I've had to pot people down in the past.
Yeah, you do.
They wouldn't play by the rules, and it's like, hey, listen, this is my show, we're playing by my rules. I'll give you your word, but you can't keep walking over the top of me.
Exactly.
You're right.
Right. And when you're in person, you have to be a little bit more finessing and make sure that you're being polite, but also firm. And that's all.
Yeah, well, some people are married to steamrollers, too, and that makes it even more difficult.
Yeah, absolutely right. You know, and the bottom line, I think, Greg, in all of this, when I'm looking at it from a whole big macro perspective, is that you're really just caring about people. I mean, that's the bottom line is you love the Lord and you love people, and you know that the Lord has given us this commission to go out and to make disciples and to share Christ with people. And we need to be open to having conversations, not necessarily so we can close the deal right then and there, but so that we're being faithful to the Lord and understanding that it is God who gives the growth, and we just need to be faithful. And I think this is just such a tremendous resource, as you mentioned before, for any small group or Bible study or church, just to be able to effectively discuss your Christian convictions with other people. It is called Tactics. Greg Kokel, It Went Too Fast. Check them out at str.org.
It always does, doesn't it?
Greg, it goes so fast, but it is always really a real honor to have you here. Thank you so much.
It's such a pleasure for me, too. Thanks, Janet.
All right. God bless you. Have a great day. And again, str.org, Stand to Reason. Greg Kokel, wonderful, wonderful. Best guest. Thanks, Greg. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you next time. JanetMefford.com.